I'll try to remember what I had explained to me a long time back. So the idea is that you want to identify, have a probability of switching off of the different disk, right, of the target disk.
Yes.
And based on the probability of switching off, you want to create replicas. So you want to create replicas of the disk with probability of switching off, which is highest, in disks that have lower probability of switching off.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
you know that those disks are going to remain active more often than the other disks. So if you have a copy of data that of disks that have a higher probability of switching off, you can increase the chance of keeping that disk switched off. So I think what the algorithm here is in terms of choosing how many copies and in which disk to put those copies in, right? So I think if I remember this at an abstract level, not at the actual algorithm step by step, was to create one replica first for the disk that has the highest probability of being switched off.
Yeah.
Right? In the disk that has the lowest probability of being switched off.
Yeah.
Right? And then you change the probability, or rather change the preference for the disk that you just created a replica for, so that other disks get a chance to create replicas.
Okay.
So the disk where you are creating the replica, now lower its probability to be turned off.
That's true. That is true. Further, even more than what it was before. Actually,
exactly.
So, okay, let me try to explain this. I mean, I don't think I remember all the details, but I sort of understand it at a high level.
That's the question of words location.
Lower because it's less than zero, it's less than one.
So I think the first is you have this with D1, D2, so on, Dn, right? And so each disk Di has a probability Pi of switching off. So let's assume that it's already available.
Okay.
Somehow. Then the goal is to create replicas of each disk in other disks.
Mm-hmm.
And now this could be single disk or it could be sub-disk. Right? So you could think of this as a sub-disk.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, here also you have D1, D2. These are the targets.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, first you start by replicating this, I think this is what it was. So you make a replica like this.
Yeah.
And you assign a weight of the probability of Pn. That's what I understand.
Of D1. Wait, it says D1.
It says D1?
Yeah.
Yeah, because actually it makes sense to make it Dn, right?
We start a weight. Wij equals the probability Pi.
Okay.
Is I on the left?
Is I on the left?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is Wij, right?
Yeah.
In this case, 1n. 1. Right? So this is W1, n. You start with the highest weight or the lowest one?
So the highest.
The highest, because the highest probability of being switched off, correct. So highest weight, and you make a copy on the disk.
Why would you like to start by...
With the highest, because the highest probability of being switched off, and if I make a replica for that disk,
then I'm increasing the probability of being switching off.
It wouldn't make sense to do it for DN, because DN would be
so DN,
on.
So let's say DN has a very low probability of being switched off. Then even if you make a copy, you do not really capture the working set. The probability, I think it's important to understand how this probability is being computed. This probability is computed based on the overlapping in the working set.
Mm-hmm.
So if your overlap is higher, then
right.
Then the probability of being switched off is in a way higher because
mm-hmm.
the argument is that you will have replicas elsewhere. So for the disk that has a high probability of being switched off because it has a large overlap in the working set, you make copies of its working set on other disks so that it can be switched off.
Right. Okay.
Correct? Now, once you make a copy, then in a way you say that, well, now I have a chance of switching this off.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to now move on to the next guy.
Okay, so let me ask you one more question. So DW1N will make V1 to be more likely to be turned off.
More likely to be turned off.
Rather than DN less likely to be turned off.
DN is that only depends on if you are redirecting traffic to DN from D1. If you redirect all the traffic from D1 to DN, then you are right that it reduces the probability that DN can be switched off.
Okay.
But the probability of DN being switched off is really small anyway. So even if you made copies of DN, you cannot probably switch it off. So since it's going to be on anyway, then serve additional traffic from DN.
Okay.
So that other disk can be switched off.
Okay.
Right? Now, once you make a copy, and here's where the modification of the weight comes in, right? You do not want to keep making multiple copies of V1 on DN all the time. You want to make multiple copies of V1, but in a way so that you also get to make copies of other guys.
Okay, no idea.
So so once you make copy of V1, you reduce the weight, either the weight or the probability, whatever you want to do, so that D1 is no longer the most important to replicate because it already has one replica, right? So next you want to move on to the next likely switching off disk, which is D2, because these are sorted based on the probability. And you make copy of D2 on either DN or DN minus 1, whichever has space, right? And then you go ahead and reduce this weight. The weight is based on the probability. Once again, the reduction in weight is also based on the probability. So it could be that before you make a copy of D2, you make two copies of D1 because the difference in this probability is so large that it makes more sense to replicate D1 because with two copies, it has a higher chance of getting turned off, right?
Right. So, okay. So. Okay.
Actually, yeah, I mean, this is sort of a little bit tricky. I don't think I'm explaining it very well. But the point is that you want to give other disks also an opportunity to create replicas, right? So once you make copies of D2 and so on, in a way, what's happening is that you can say that you are increasing the probability of being switched off, right? And you're reducing the probability of being switched off.
Exactly.
Switched off, right?
Okay.
So which is what you meant. I sort of gave you a wrong answer earlier.
Okay.
And this is also increasing. So you're sort of reducing the probabilities as you go up,
mm-hmm.
and you're increasing the probability when you go, from the bottom. Well, I should just say you're always reducing the probability of being switched off as you go from top to the bottom. The whole idea of the algorithm is that in the end of this algorithm, there will be some point where the disks above this point have a high probability of getting switched off, and the disks, or I should say probability of getting switched off higher than what they started off with,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of the disk with the probability of getting switched off
I see,
so
lower
so
than what they started off with, and and then you can just run off of this set of disk drives for a long period of
okay,
time.
So the idea is that now you have this bimodal distribution where you have ideally you have a lot
mm-hmm.
of disks to be turned up
right.
and a lot of or few disks to be to keep turned on, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that's the idea, is that you want to change the probabilities of being on and off by
based
moving
on,
by
moving
make,
the,
by
okay.
not moving but actually replicating.
Right.
Yeah. But it's a bit more complex than what I just described, and I have to look at the algorithm more carefully before I can explain the whole
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, I think with this explanation I can okay, because, well, the name of weight is, for me, was a little bit confusing. And actually, I guess a better thing would be just to update the probability itself, right, rather than having an additional variable called weight.
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, updating the probability would sort of make sense as well. But in a way, you're updating weights based on the probability, right? Is there an equation for how the weight gets updated in the iterative step?
Yes.
Yeah? Wik is C1 times Pjp, Pj times Pi.
Yeah, that's the little thing that we don't know exactly what's I, what's J, what's K. Just before.
No, but it's K, right? Oh, J.
Yeah.
I guess it's a probability of... Well, IJ, I guess it's this guy and this J.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it's I... Maybe this should be IJ, right? Maybe it should be IJ.
Yeah.
Should it be IJ or some?
Yeah, that makes sense, IJ. What is C1, though?
C1 is some constant.
Just to okay.
Yeah, I need to read this once again to be more carefully. So here the initial target ordering is you compute the initial PIs based on the working set. So probability is inversely proportional to the working set. Oh, actually, working set size.
Yeah, so that's another.
Oh, the working set size
in different ways.
So okay. Now let me. Then that's not what I said earlier about overlap of working set is not what Akshat meant. He's just looking at the size of the working set, and if the size is small.
So,
then
so given a trace for a week, what is the working
set? It depends on what is the granularity that you define the working set at, right? So you have working set for a day, you have working set for a week,
okay.
And these are two different things.
Okay.
And you have working set for each day of the week. And then the question is how much overlap you have. Now, one thing which you can say is that I define the working set based on 90% overlap. If I get 90% overlap, then that's my working set.
Okay.
So which means that if I take day-wise working sets and I'm getting 50% overlap across multiple days, and I take some history as well. Let's take a history of 1 week.
Okay.
And if I take day working set, then I get 50% overlap. And then I say, well, if I take month working set, full month working set, then I get 90% overlap, then I say that all the data that's been accessed during the entire month is my working set.
Okay.
So you have to have some notion of how do you define working set, which would be based on the percentage of overlap of content that is accessed.
And that would be something dynamic in the system, or not? We'll fix it in the experiments.
We'll probably have to fix it, because this is sort of the self-configuring component,
yeah.
Right, self-tuning component, which is certainly another interesting direction that if we can explore in this work, that would be great. But I think we have to address some more simple questions, basic questions first, before we sort of go into this degree of configuration, right, automatic configuration. So that's how you can, say, define the working set if I can have working set for one day and see, well, 90% is repeating even across each single day, then my one day data is the working set.
But so the working set at the end of that week, at the end of that week, is the little set that was, that is intersection of everything? No.
In a way, yes. That's right.
Okay. So per day would be pretty small.
Well, I should say, well, let me say that.
And only for it as well, right?
Yeah, we should discuss this, more formally,
yes,
about how we define the working set. But sort of at an abstract level, what you have to think of is a working set is something that is accessed most of the time for that disk.
Okay.
And if I capture all that data and make a copy elsewhere, then the idea is that I should be able to divert most of my traffic to the other disk so that these disks can be switched off. Maybe there is one or two misses, right? But most of the time you go to the other disk, and so you can keep this disk switched off for long periods of time.
Because it seems that, I mean, just with the fact that, just with the little knowledge that the working set is small or big, it's not enough to say the disk should be turned off or on.
It also depends on how much overlap there is.
Yes.
How much predictable it is.
Exactly, idea of predictability. Yeah.
Yeah, how much predictability.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about intuitively based on working set overlap that you would define the probability of being switched off, right? Regardless of how you define working set.
Okay.
If you can define probability based on overlap of working set, then you're done, right? Then it's easy because then I know how much predictability I have for future workload because I know overlap. So that's how I was thinking about defining this probability. But I think Akshat has another point, which is if your working set is too large, then maybe you don't have space to make copies.
Yes,
and then
that's the way he thinks.
Yeah, that's another issue.
Yes.
Yeah, but if your working set is too big,
then
you most likely won't make a replica because your probability of being turned off would be very small.
Right. It depends on how you define working set overlap. If your working set overlap is defined over months, then I could have a really high overlap. But this working set size itself is so small. So what I would say is that the probability is sort of proportional to inverse of the working set size, which is good, but also directly proportional to the working set overlap. Right? So if we do something like this, then maybe we have a better idea of probability of being switched off. Because then you have a greater probability. If you have a smaller working set, you can make more copies.
Yeah.
If you have a greater working set overlap, you have a greater probability of diverting, right?
Yeah.
So it should be dependent on sort of both of these.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so that's the high-level idea. There is an iterative step which I don't really understand at this point. I need to go back to the paper and look at it more carefully. So, what did you guys talk about today? The meeting was, for me, the complete mess. I should have stayed home, but I had to come because I had another meeting at 9:30.
So actually we were talking more about how are we gonna
simulator and implementation.
Yeah, right? Mostly that. Simulation and implementation, but I think he wants me to do the prototype.
Okay.
They have experience in board.
Okay.
So he was, for instance, asking me how hard was to implement that.
Mm.
I said that it was pretty hard. But I had some experience, so I suppose you think that's
so. So what I was trying to say in that meeting, I don't know if it was even relevant what I said, but I think is that we could actually do the entire evaluation from a single machine standpoint.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's the same idea you have.
To have like several disks
mm-hmm.
accessible from the
mm-hmm.
same machine. We don't have to connect it to the same control,
that's true.
You know, to the
yeah.
same
host, it could be on the network also, possibly, if we need, if needed, right?
Yeah. So
you know, where iSCSI or something like that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That could be. And, you know, we only have one operating system working on doing the work, right?
Yeah, so we don't have the distributed operating system problem.
Yeah, the thing is that, I don't know, so definitely we are not measuring power in the prototype, right? Because we don't have...
Well, we don't have to. I mean, one of the things that Akshat mentioned was if we could measure the bits offline for power consumption,
mm-hmm.
to say, well, how much power does this consume during normal operation? How much power does it consume during switching off?
Okay.
Then what we can do is run the experiment and find out the durations where we actually switch off.
Right.
And based on that duration, the time information, we can extrapolate the power consumption across all these districts.
Right. So I think probably we can do that because they have this, something that we bought some time ago that is this thing to connect a normal disk to the USB.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, in that case, we have this power supply, but totally apart from the computer itself.
Yeah,
so I guess that could be kind of factory.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because in that with this component you can measure only the power consumed by the disk and well probably the USB protocol. I don't know. But I guess that would be minimal. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because with the power, I had an issue. The thing is that, okay, we saw that a disk, an idle disk, 0 watts, a disk spinning, a couple of watts.
No, idle disk is not 0 watts.
Not 0 watts.
No, because it's spinning.
Okay, but the idea is that from idle to actually doing something is a huge difference. And between low intensity and high intensity is very small. That's the idea, right?
No, when you say idle, do you mean standby?
No, no,
not doing that. Doing nothing.
I mean, we're going to turn off the disks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
so
no.
That level compared to low intensity and
to
high intensity.
So the way I see idle, just to get the terms clarified, is that if the disk is not serving any I/O request.
Okay, but it's on.
It's spinning.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I think so. We can measure, for instance, when the disk is on standby. Which is, I think, the lowest power that we can go to. Next, we can measure idle, which means when it's not servicing any I/O request. And then the third state is active, when it is actually serving I/O request. And then there is fourth, which is transition from standby to idle or to active, because that power consumption we know is higher than active.
Yeah. And the other way around, as well, going from idle to standby.
And idle to standby also is higher power consumption?
Yeah, because I think you have to stop spinning, right? I mean, you need to consume some energy there. I read somewhere. So it's not that you can leave the disk spinning forever, right? But you have to stop it because it's dangerous.
The idea now is then that for the simulator, let's say, to calculate the total amount of power consumed, it's not only in terms of time that the disk were spinning, so it's in terms of how many times did we actually
turn it on and off.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, I don't know, and you have to come up with an idea. Can we do something like introduce an SSD and have make it very high probability, like have it empty, and give it a high probability because it's your
to observe all the writes?
To both. Do the same as the disk, but it's only dedicated for it's only scratch rate. So you assign a high probability, you will use it for most of the low probability disk.
Yeah, it would be nice to like somehow, I don't know if it's possible and do it, but to add to the model some information about the device. So the type of device that's storing the data can affect the way things are played.
So, and your goal is to have
SSD because it's low power.
Right. So, yeah, so I think SSDs consume probably less power than a disk in standby mode, I think.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, if we can come up with a good argument to say that this is a reasonable comparison, because are we comparing against a system that does not have an SSD?
Right.
And if we are, then...
That's true.
Because that other system is lower cost, right? But there is a certain advantage of using SSD because then... Well, actually, the problem is that the SSD is expensive per byte. So you cannot store a lot of information in there, right? So...
Mm-hmm.
What this allow you to do is to copy lots of stuff, make lots of replicas, so that you increase the probability of being switched off.
Mm-hmm.
With SSDs, you cannot really do that. That's one of the things to bear in mind.
I mean, also, some thinking, is there a way to introduce some kind of cost here of replica, saying that, okay, when I have a disk, right, with high probability or lower probability of being, low probability of being thrown out, then the scratch space in that disk is expensive, in the sense that you should put there data that will be accessed all the time. So, sorry, I don't know if this model includes that, but...
So, can you repeat that? I mean, you're saying a disk which has low probability of...
Low probability of being thrown out.
Okay.
Or high probability of being thrown out.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so...
It should contain data...
You have free space there.
Mm-hmm.
It should... That space should have high cost.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because...
That disk will be always active.
That disk will be always active, and that space should be used only by data that you know will be accessed. Otherwise, it's like having.
In a way, that's what this iterative algorithm is trying to do, I believe. The most important data to replicate is data of the disk that has the highest probability of being switched off.
Right.
Because if any disk can be switched off, then this is the first disk that has the probability of being switched off. So let me make a copy and create the possibility of it being switched off.
Yeah, and the probability also includes the
things like a working set.
The
size.
Working set and
there's
the,
one
the
more
bandwidth
thing.
Use.
The
traffic, I guess.
The traffic is small.
Yeah.
I mean, is that the idea that the smallest traffic?
No, that if you have high traffic to the disk, then you have lower probability of being thrown out.
So it's inversely proportional. The row is the
load.
Workload. Yeah, it's the load on this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. That if you have a low load, then it is easier for you to transfer that workload to some other disk. Is a smaller working set also easy to transfer to some other disk? You should also have a priority for more predictability. So if a workload is more predictable, then you should transfer it to the other disk.
Okay.
So I guess one question is that, I mean, does this equation is this sort of additive equation, right? So the linear combination of the terms. So what if I multiply these terms instead of making linear combination? How does that change the behavior of this probability function?
No, I think it makes sense to make an summation because those two are probably themselves, right? So if you multiply them, the result would be lower.
I really don't get why the load is important.
The what?
The load. I mean,
why is the load important?
Yeah.
So imagine that you have only one block, one disk.
Yeah.
Okay, the working set is very, very small.
Yes.
So if you just take into account the working set, that probability of being thrown out food is very high.
Yep.
But that block is accessed many times, always.
So if it's accessed many, many times, it's better to duplicate it.
Exactly.
But here is inverse.
Here is inverse. Like for what if you have a lot of traffic, it's better to.
No, I think the motivation behind making it inverse is that
mm-hmm.
it is much easier to find a target for this disk because you just need a small amount of bandwidth to additional bandwidth in the target disk to serve this contract.
So it's not for the goal is not power. The goal is to not degrade that workload too much.
In terms of the performance, yeah. So you can actually support the workload.
Okay.
And I think also that term is taking into account what I was saying earlier, that with this high probability, then you of being thrown out, then you will replicate that in a low probability disk, where the space is more expensive. In the sense that, okay, if you have some space free in a disk that have low probability of being thrown out, that space better used for some data that you know will be used a lot, right? Because that disk will be on always.
Yes.
So if you take into account that term,
yeah,
then you also take into account this. Or solve this problem, right?
Yes.
I think you explained two times already. Can you explain three times?
Sure. So the thing is that what I was saying is that this also having this term the
inversely proportional
to the load also solves the problem of the cost I was talking earlier. So if you have a disk that have a low probability of being thrown out,
mm-hmm.
And you have free space on that disk, mm-hmm. that space is very costly because
mm-hmm.
You know that disk will be always turned on, and you need to put valuable data there,
mm-hmm.
very valuable data. So by having this
mm-hmm.
this additional number, now you make the probability of that to be on higher. Sorry, off higher, which means that would be more selectable to make the replica, right? No.
Anyway, so
okay.
I think we
I can do that for
No, it didn't make sense for me.
No.
The previous time it did.
Okay. Actually, the previous time is what I want to say.
Okay. Because if the thing is already busy, why would you want to put more stuff in it?
Right. So you're saying.
Right, but.
So the disk which has lower probability of being turned off is already busy.
Yeah. Why would you want to put more? To do more stuff.
But
to degrade performance.
No, but
even more,
having a big working set doesn't mean that you have a lot of load, right?
Mm. Right.
So actually, it's different. And
I think Ricardo was explaining why you need the row item based on your explanation because you create additional load on a disk,
mm-hmm.
on a different disk, and then the lesser load, additional load you create, the better it is. And therefore,
right.
if you choose to replicate disks that increase the load on other disks by the smallest amount.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but then also
so by
the probability is different, right? I mean, you cannot measure that as one number, but rather you have to do it two numbers. And that would be some kind of...
I think that would... Yeah, you could do that, but it's too expensive then. Yeah, I mean, too complex to...
It's too complex.
...to formulate. This
yeah.
is sort of a simpler version of that idea.
Yeah, okay. So it doesn't make sense again?
No, it makes...
I think now it makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you want to identify a target for application which adds the least load to the system, right? Because it's going to add load to some other component of the system, and you want to make that add additional load the least value.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
What else?
So in terms of the simulator, so what did you guys talk about? Did Akshat explain the simulator?
Yeah, a little bit. There are like three main components already implemented.
Uh-huh.
One component is the one that gets the traces and calculates working state and bandwidth and all that. But that specific piece of code that actually calculates the working state is not there.
Mm-hmm.
Like a skeleton. Then there is another component that, what is the second component?
You have the calculation of the replica and you have the calculation of the mapping. Or first, you have
first
the calculation
you
of the probability
set.
Actually,
the goal is to first find the probabilities, right?
Yes.
And that calculating probabilities may require you to calculate some other things.
Yes.
Like
based
one
on this formula.
Right.
Working set size, maybe working set overlap, that's another thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Load. And then, so once you have the probabilities, then implement the algorithm. So the algorithm is for identifying source and target. For creating replicas.
Yeah, that's the second component.
That's the second
yeah.
component, which is already implemented.
Which is implemented, yeah.
Okay, and then the third
component is the
dynamic
yeah.
redirection.
Yeah, and pretty much all the code is the iterative algorithm.
No, but the iterative algorithm is the one that identifies the replicas.
Oh, yeah, it was split into
two
components.
I see, okay.
Yeah.
So the initial and then the iterative.
Exactly, yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But then there is one more component, which is the...
The one that actually picks stuff to turn on and off.
Yeah, exactly.
That one is not there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's the status of the simulator.
Right. Okay. So... All right. So what did you guys discuss about the simulator and what to do next about the simulator?
Yeah, so... I don't know. I have been reading the simulator and trying to figure out what it is doing.
Okay.
So I don't have a clear yet.
So, I'm sort of thinking in terms of which of you wants to focus on which part of the next step, right?
I think that.
And it's up to you. It's really I don't really have any advice to give. You pick whichever decide. Talk amongst yourself and whatever you feel more comfortable doing. Or if you want to do both together.
That works.
Yeah, I think that's better.
Okay, so you want to work on both of these things and together at the same time, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
And there's something else I have to work first on is getting the traces in a different format because now the traces are merge, like for a single loop, and it separates the traces.
For multiple disks?
For multiple disks and stuff like that.
That's true, yeah.
Which is pretty much getting the original.
But no, the original ones are single disk, right?
Yes. That's why.
Why do you need to separate them?
Because the final traces we have now, like for example for the home workload is like everything merged in a single disk.
When it's actually not.
When it's actually a bunch of disks.
No, but, this is how you would actually have it, right? That you would have it all on the same disk in a way. And then you actually have some sort of a RAID, and then you rerun.
So, yeah, that was another question I had, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, we can do it that way, but that would mean an arbitrary partitioning of the working set instead of keeping like it was before. So I don't know. Maybe that's making a difference.
No, well, actually, it would make huge difference, right? Because when you split it based on RAID, and you say it's a single disk, then the disk I/O activity are highly correlated.
Yes, that's true. Yes. And we don't want it.
Well, I think the question here is, what is the real scenario? We don't want to create an artificial scenario
for us to sell our idea, right?
So the real scenario was, you see, with this, for example, we were generating jigs of traces every day, and the other disk, for example, mine has had a couple of hundreds of megs every day. So there is a high
variability
in the workflows for that example.
Mm.
So we want to keep variability, that's something we want.
Mm.
Right?
The other thing is that, I don't know if this is target to work in a desktop environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't make sense to a developer, right? Or use a developer.
But even if it doesn't, that's the biggest problem we have.
No, we have the Cheetah workload.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's...
We have the Cheetah workload, we have the Homes workload, then we have the web server.
Yeah, web server, and also we have the Doomsday.
So we have several different workloads. Now, what I was originally thinking about is to have, let's say, like a 3-disk RAID for each workload. You know, 2+1, RAID 5, or something like that, or even as simple as RAID 0 with 2 or 3 disks. I think RAID 5 is probably more realistic, but then we had this additional problem of parity calculations that we are not accounting for.
They could write some dummy tables.
No, we can, but I'm thinking, do we need to or not? I mean, if we do redirection, then we don't really need to, right?
Yeah.
In a way, we can say that it doesn't matter whether you have parity or not, because parity is before, or is sort of after the indirection. So if you have parity on one of the disks, on one of the RAIDs, you just have parity on the other RAID instead. And that's in a way we can say that it's a constant cost. That if you have parity based RAID, that you will pay that additional cost in both the systems. The vanilla system as well as our system.
So, I mean, what you said was that, I mean, striping the workflows would security rate all the loads and all the disks. We don't want.
We'll do that on all the disks within a single RAID, but across the RAIDs, because they're
multiple RAIDs. Okay.
Because they're all different workloads, then we could actually have them independent, right? And I mean, now that I think about it, do we need to even do RAID at all, or just have single disk? Or if we just have single disk?
I guess we won't lose anything.
Do we lose anything? Maybe we just, yeah, I don't think we lose anything. Because in the end, if you want to show percentage power reduction, maybe it remains the same whether we do RAID or not. So instead of having one disk turned on, if you split it across 3 disks, then you will consume twice as much power. But if you turn off that disk, in our case, we reduce power on all 3 disks simultaneously. So in terms of percentage, the power consumption calculations remain the same.
So in terms of consistency, are we losing something? Are we assuming each disk or M disk here is a RAID or something?
So one thing which we are assuming is that the failure fault tolerance of the source and target volumes are the same.
Okay.
So if we create a scratch partition on a separate RAID, we actually create a RAID scratch partition instead of a single disk scratch partition.
Okay.
We do a RAID scratch partition. When you write to it, it also gets protected.
Okay, so the other thing is that this each scratch space is actually an additional partition apart from the disk itself.
Right, correct.
An additional partition.
Yes.
Like what, right?
About the rights and then we have a question about saying that. So it seems like the only characteristics important for a workload in this work is just working cell and bandwidth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, so why not using just Postmark or something like that, so we can characterize pretty much all ranges of different applications. But Akshat said something that's actually was a key point, is that something very important here is not only that, it's also the relation between reads and writes. Because writes make this issue thing that we have to synchronize among several copies and things like that. And that's why we shouldn't be using benchmarks. But then we could use some more realistic benchmarks like Spalding and use all sorts of workflows from FileBench.
Yeah, but FileBench doesn't work.
Doesn't work?
No, I have tried because for the flash profiling, I thought, well, if I'm doing these micro benchmarks, probably it's easier to use FileBench, right? Because now you have these small scripts where you can do the whole thing. So I was trying to use it, and I wasn't able to use it. Yeah. Segmentation fault, sometimes just stopped working. So for now, FileBench.
And actually, it's not maintained.
Yeah, and in fact, I think the last version was from 2007.
No.
At least for Linux. I don't know about Solaris.
I never used that on FileBench. I heard so much about
FileBench. Yeah. Well, there was one guy who spoke a lot about FileBench.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sound.
This guy. Yeah, exactly. But, okay, so where are we at? I mean, so we are still using traces. The good thing about traces is that they are, in a way, real, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only issue is that for the cheetah, for the mail, the web VM, and the online, on the homes workload, we have correct timestamps.
Yes.
But the others, we don't. I don't think we have correct timestamps. Do we have correct timestamps for the SVN?
Why not?
What I mean is that the time of the day and things like that, do we know what time of the day the trace was collected?
I see what you mean.
Is there any way to find that? Maybe by looking at what time the file was created, the block trace? Or
that's the only thing I can think of. But rather than that, I don't think we can.
Just like shifting.
It is shifting, but we want to say that, well, if we want to shift it, then we could shift it in a convenient position where we have variability, right? So as much as possible, we want to maintain the original time synchronized traces. At least we should synchronize at the 24-hour mark, because there are people who have made a lot of studies saying that, well, each day there is peak activity and then downwards activity. So if we shift them so that peak coincides with down, then we have better opportunities for power saving, which in a way is not fair, or it's not correct for us to do. So I don't know if there is a way to get time synchronized traces. If not, then we just pick a random point in the trace and say, well, day starts here, and this is 0 hour, 0 minute.
But most likely, the point where we see almost no load would be
middle of the night.
Middle of the night.
Yeah, something like that.
Or 10 a.m.
For the whole workload.
Yeah.
For the whole workload, that's the case.
Yeah. So, what do we do?
I think we can figure out a way to get the approximate time for the SVN running.
Okay.
So that's one. And what are the other workloads we use? One was Mera's desktop. I think that's something we should
Mera's desktop, I think at the end we didn't use it.
We used it. At least for some of the analysis and the virtual machine, and I think something.
But I don't remember doing replay.
Not replay, but actual experiments for starting application.
Start up time for the analysis.
Yeah.
The overlapping working set.
Anyway, we cannot use it because it's not really server workload.
Yeah.
The other one was.
Was
developer.
Mine is developer.
So we cannot use that either.
George was using web server,
which we can actually use.
We can use, but actually it's not a trace, so it's an actual workload.
It's an actual workload, but we have traces also collected based
okay,
on the workload. But we don't have real-time trace.
Mm-hmm.
We have speed-up trace. So how do we create real-time trace from the speed-up trace? Or maybe what we need to do is to speed everything else up to the same speed as the one that we did with the web, with the web server.
Mm-hmm.
So we all have all of them synchronized. So that's another tricky question. Do we want to do that, or how easy is it, how hard is it?
We also have the
SVN server.
And we also have some
Wiki.
Yeah,
Doomsday. Okay. So let's start by using these three traces that we already have and start doing the replay to see if we can synchronize replay
mm-hmm.
of these three traces on a single machine. Is that reasonable to do?
Yeah, I think so.
And so the second thing is which machine should we use?
Mm.
A machine which we can connect many disks to.
Yeah, I guess we can borrow DDLPA controllers, right? If we need more.
No, but I mean there has to be space inside the
well,
box,
we can leave it open. We can leave it open and just put the machine in the floor and have it.
In some of the talks somebody mentioned.
One problem could be that we don't have enough power.
Power, yeah, exactly.
So probably one additional thing we can do is to take one of the power suppliers of one of the machines we're not using it.
Use that for the disk?
Mm-hmm. For the record.
But they're still connected to the same machine, the
same
original
machine. But with a different power supply.
I didn't know that you could do something like that. Have an alternate power supply.
Yeah.
I guess why not? Yeah, because it's just a power cable that's coming in, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah. So I think that would be one, is to set up the environment.
So I don't know how much you know about this, but because now I am thinking that probably we can use the same idea to measure the power of the disk itself. So use one dedicated power supply for one disk and measure the power that is consuming that power supply, right?
But we can plug to one power supply all the disks, only disks, and we only care about the total.
We can also do that.
Because we are concerned about the total power.
Just power.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And then we can measure continuously.
Yeah, and that's easier than actually go through each.
But you know that, yeah, that's true.
Let's try to do a sort of, what do you say, pilot.
Yeah.
To figure out if it is feasible.
I don't know, do you know if there are...
Is there a way to automatically record it? I mean, so we can look at the dial, but we cannot look at it continuously and write on
our...
We're trying to do it.
We found for the kilowatts
uh-huh.
that we have downstairs, we found a vlog of a guy
uh-huh.
that modified the kilowatts somehow
uh-huh.
and made the
a wireless calculator.
A wireless connection with the computer
mm.
and record the data.
Yeah,
but we have to, you have to buy some things and.
If we want to, if it's already available, and that guy is selling it, we can buy it.
I would back to ask the guy. Yeah.
No, it's not selling. I mean, the guy's not.
Yeah, but maybe the guy is
saying
selling.
You need to buy this resistance and.
No, I was checking the blog, and the guy has like actual company.
And he's selling that?
I don't know if that is specifically, but he did some other crazy thing.
But I guess.
If he's selling it and it's available online, then we can buy it.
Yeah, that would be better.
Yeah.
Because last time when we bought those kilowatts, well, the thing is I wanted to reuse them, but, if we can buy another one.
Yeah, we'll buy another one. It's not that expensive.
No, but there are other ones. These ones. The difference between this one and the one that have a connection with the computer
yeah.
that was a USB connector was in the order of $90.
Yeah.
$90. That's fine. That's fine. Let's buy the other one. It's $90 is not a problem.
Okay. So, actually, it's a difference. Then, so it was something like $120.
It's still okay. It's okay. Still okay, but you need to send me the link for that new device, which actually allows us to.
I like better the
kilowatt.
The wireless.
Okay.
One, because then you don't have to.
Yeah,
you don't need a dedicated computer for that.
If we can buy the wireless, then that's great. Yeah.
Okay. And if not, I would prefer to construct it.
Yeah, I know.
But
that might take you a long time.
You never know, but they said, you know, they give the instructions
that you need
step by step.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I don't know.
That's good. I mean, that's also fun, right? So,
yeah,
so if none of this works and we need to construct it, then I'll...
Okay.
You tell me what raw material to buy and we can buy that.
Okay.
Yeah. But this is good. I mean, if we can actually measure real power, then our paper becomes much more solid.
So what we can do is take as much power supplies as we need, right, to power all the disks and measure them.
Yeah, measure all of them simultaneously. Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
So okay, so I forgot to ask. I don't know if you know something about this. Do you know if these power supplies consume some power by yourself, or?
No, probably true, yeah. I mean, because you don't have any system that consumes zero energy and does some useful work, right?
Right.
Now, this useful work is that he's doing voltage transformation.
Okay.
Right?
So
that's going to consume power also.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
if you put it after the, instead of putting it between, I'm assuming that this kilowatt is a DC power meter. Not an AC power.
It's AC. Because you connect it to
the wall. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So you connect that to the wall, and then you connect your thing.
I see. Okay. Then we are measuring power that's being consumed by this and as well as this guy.
Yeah.
But it's a constant power consumption, so we can
say.
Yeah, it's constant, but I don't know how big it is.
But if it's constant and big, we can still construct.
Yeah, but how do you measure the constant power? I mean,
by
plug it in without anything.
Yeah, I guess you can do that, right? But even in that case, you are not measuring exactly the constant power.
Because it's not
when
really
you consume energy, you are also converting more energy.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, I guess.
So one thing which you could do is put the disks on standby so they consume some minimum power and then.
That's also true.
That's one thing we could do. Or we can say that this power measurement also includes additional power that's consumed.
I think that's probably good enough.
The transformer.
That's probably good enough. And that power consumption will be there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know the difference.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess we can, one thing we can do is to go and try these crazy things with the power supply.
We should be writing code.
We
should be writing some code.
Yeah, as well.
Yeah.
And writing some code. So, I don't know, should I...
Well, I think what you might want to do is to send me the information about the device that you want to buy, because you know this purchasing takes its own sweet time.
Okay.
So the earlier we send out the order, the earlier we get it.
Okay.
Right. So that's sort of highest level of priority at this point.
Okay.
To identify target product to purchase.
Okay.
And then I send out the order and might take, I don't know, hopefully we get it within a week. If it's a product that's not easily obtainable, it can take longer. But in any case, we cannot do, I mean, we can maybe just start with the milliwatt.
Kilowatt,
and then we can see if what we can do with that kilowatt, and by setting up the disks on a separate power supply, and then replace the kilowatt with whichever other device we buy later on for actually measuring this power online.
Okay.
In real time. But for now, to do the pilot, we could just use kilowatt.
Mm-hmm.
and do things like turn off this and look at the kilowatt reading, that we can do some of these things manually for the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's good to have, because power is something that's really important from a research standpoint. And with storage especially, power is an issue, right? So if we build some infrastructure for us to get real good power measurements, we can use it for future projects, maybe several future projects, right? So it's a one-time investment of effort and time, which can really be beneficial in later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I was telling Ricardo, lately I have been more interested in power again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, switch of of topic, you know, very quickly. But, you know, power looks like a good topic to work on.
It certainly is, yeah. But it's also hard to work on because it's not easy to measure power.
Yeah.
So,
true.
But if we invest time and set up our infrastructures, then we are in a good position to do some power research.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the excess work, which was basically power, right?
Yeah.
But that was easy because we could measure battery levels.
In the laptop.
But we cannot really do that for all other. That's not a general solution.
No. I think this gonna work. The pilot.
Okay, that's great. Let's do the pilot first. Any other things that we should talk about now?
No.
So then, in the next week, did you guys set up anything for next week? What should we discuss next week with us?
No, actually. No.
Okay. I guess we should go in detail to this stuff.
Yeah, but Ricardo's in Bolivia. So
yeah, I'm
you're going to
Bolivia
in the spring break.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I can meet. That was my plan to meet.
From Skype?
Yeah. Everybody is.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah, I was planning to like call you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
if you can join, then we
no, of course. Yeah. That's okay.
Have a meeting.
Yeah.
But actually, probably won't be able to go because they have to take Barbara to the doctor.
Next Wednesday?
Next Wednesday. So at 9 a.m. So I don't know if I'll be able to go to, you know, we'll be available that time.
Okay.
But we can also change.
We can change the time for just next week, maybe.
Exactly.
That's not a problem. Is the time zone for Bolivia the same as here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the exact same.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then we could meet. What time do you want to meet? Doctor always takes longer than I expect.
Right.
So I think that the morning time does not really work. We could do night, starting at 10:30. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Just for next week, and then the following day we go back to the morning time.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay, then I'll set up emails for change of time.
Yeah. So, well, this is totally out of topic, right? But, you know, I saw a video, very interesting video from some guys of Sun in UK, and they have there a data center, right? So I don't know how they discovered this, but apparently when they shout to the disk, when they shout to the disk, the disk become crazy, need to correct some errors, and start going again.
Yeah, I think I read that article too.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't know why.
It could be so many things. I mean, it could be maybe the vibration is some harmonic of internal vibration or something like that. It could be that, right? Because you're producing audio waves, and maybe that frequency matches some internal. What do you call this frequency, right? Harmonic or some there is a term for this where you can actually if you create frequency for some, let's say for some building, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you blow sound waves at a certain frequency than actually the building.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's when you, for instance, in music, when you,
yeah.
you know, in piano, when you do this one note, all
yeah.
the notes of the same, or all the same notes also vibrate.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, something like that. So you can create external sound to make the vibrations higher. And
right.
if it's the harmonic? No.
There's some
term for that, and then maybe the vibration gets created
because
of that.
Basic standard.
That could be it, but could be something. I don't know.
Yeah, the other thing I saw that actually Andres sent me, remember Andres, the Cuban guy that worked in this bench?
Gonzalez.
Yeah,
Andres Gonzalez.
That?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
The guy.
So he's working for IBM, I think.
Uh-huh.
Wisconsin or Minnesota.
Okay, yeah, I know.
So he sent me this link of some Samsung guy that set up 24 SSDs in a RAID seal. So they were able to have 2 gigabytes per second bandwidth. So it's crazy. They open things like very fast.
Really? There's a video of that?
Yeah, there's a video.
Yeah, follow me that.
Yeah, okay. So they do some crazy things, like they take all the cables of the devices and connect it and keep the devices just to show that it keeps
that's
working.
Reliable, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
crazy.
That's interesting.
Well, okay, I will send that to you.
Okay. So we're meeting tomorrow morning for the grading, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
At 11 o'clock.
11.
I have another question. You think we should be talking about this on Friday? Not yet.
I don't know. It's up to you, I guess. I think you probably want feedback on the DDoS.
On the DDoS stuff, yeah.
Yeah, because that's something we want to improve. I mean,
yeah.
The Eurosys guys gave us some very basic stuff for improving, but it was mostly, oh, you did great. But it's not relevant to autonomic computing, which really doesn't help us a whole lot,
yeah.
right? And so I think we still need some. We didn't really get any useful feedback from ICAC. I hope that we get a lot more, but we didn't. They should have taken our paper.
I know
you at the last moment you said maybe we should say something about autonomic computing, and I. I put something in, but obviously it was not enough. I don't know how to dress it up for autonomic computing, but the reviewers like the papers.
So did the deduplication work?
Yeah.
You can probably send it to something else, right?
We have to. I mean, the fast would be good, but it's far away, right? I mean,
Asplos, when is Asplos?
Asplos, I think it was in. It's basically same time as fast,
So you expect taking a conference at the beginning
of the year. It's already gone.
It's already gone. You expect taking it?
2009.
No. But for next year, it's already.
No.
Ah, okay.
At the beginning.
2009 still didn't happen, so it's in June.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the deadline, of course, is over.
What else could be?
Well, there is this middleware conference, and I don't know how relevant the YouTube stuff is for middleware.
You can search in this webpage that list operating systems.
Actually, if I don't know, that's a question I have. Do you think for us is better? Let's say we improve the YouTube stuff. Let's say a lot.
Mm.
And we are almost sure that we can get into fast. Do you think it's better to wait?
I think that's reasonable. But one of the concerns is that
we might not get in.
The good thing is that you have some other conferences in the systems field after fast, which is when you have
using technical, you have AS plus, you have I think HVCA. HVCA is about the same time as FAST.
Yeah.
Deadline submission, and there are a few others, but there are not a whole lot of systems conferences, unfortunately. There is this middleware conference, which I'm not sure is the right fit, because they talk about middleware as something being between the application and the operating system, right?
Oh.
And
no.
So, but I was informed that people, this is Akshat actually knows a lot more about middleware conference. He was saying that there are some operating systems papers also in this. So we should look at that. Anyway, it seems like at least immediately there is no deadline.
Yeah.
There is one deadline for mascots, which is not that, you know, it's sort of tier 2 conference.
I don't know.
It does not have too much impact. So, and I think the DDU work has more potential.
I don't know potential, but it was a lot of work. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Was too much pain to it was a lot of so that was it.
So and in the end we have a solid piece of work. So I would be not very happy to send it to a second tier conference right away. Especially when we got really good feedback from ICAC. I wish they just take our paper, but that did not happen.
Yeah.
And then we'll be done with this project, right?
Yeah.
Mm. So we'll find out a different conference, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, there is no hurry.
Yeah. There's a conference called HIPC in India, High Performance Computing. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
No.
It's held in India every year.
Cool.
And this, it's held in December every year. That's something that could potentially be a venue. Yeah, it's not, once again, this is tier 2, it's not tier 1. So.
Okay.
But it is near, I think it's in, the deadline is in May, early May sometime. So the time frame is good. Or we just wait for FAST and send it to FAST. And we work on it in the meantime to make it more solid.
I think work would mean more experiments, better ideas, or just improve the paper. I mean, for FAST, what would you think?
For FAST, I would say that we would probably need more solid evaluation.
Solid evaluation.
And maybe if we can come up with some one more idea that's
okay.
Cool or something like that, then that would do it, I think.
Okay.
But at least we need to have a much better evaluation, if not anything else.
But you see, at the end of FAST, I don't remember, apart from Borg, any paper that showed that was experimenting with real long-term trace and stuff like that. Pretty much everything was Bayesian and Boltzmann and Pavlovich, right? It was, I don't know, it was like...
Yeah, actually, I don't remember.
I think there were some evaluations that were done. For instance, the workout paper, I think, was based on some...
Oh, yeah, the workout paper. Yeah.
Based on some real workloads. What else?
Yeah, that's true.
This paper about the... There was some kind of interface for the storage. Gave this guy from CME, I think. Yeah, with great guidance.
Ah, yeah, man.
Yeah, that one was strange. Yes. That one was, that guy, I guess, the...
Ah, yeah, he did a very
was,
good experience.
Yeah,
yeah.
Was a lot of work.
Yeah.
I remember
yeah.
that he surveyed quite a few
user survey.
Yeah.
And I think the work from VMware was also based on
VMware, I don't remember its limitation.
The one about
VINFS.
No, that's a different one.
And the user that survey, I guess I'd prefer to measure this power for a month instead of doing it.
User survey?
Yeah, user survey.
So how did you like this? Did you like this feature? Did you like... I feel sorry for that guy.
How much time did it take to open these files?
You should click here, not here.
That's funny. That's nice.
Alright guys, I need to prepare solution key for tomorrow before going home. Maybe go home and do it actually. Alright, see you guys.
Alright, thank you.
Thanks.